Yo, so I want you guys to be abundantly clear on one thing this episode, and that one thing is I do not have the answers. I have more questions than answers, especially in this episode. That's a general rule of thumb for this podcast. You're coming here to hear me ramble about on a bunch of shit that I know shit about shit normally. Sometimes every now and then I might know a little something, but more often than not, I know less than less about what I'm talking about. But I'm running through these concepts, ideas, things, questions, and just spitballing where I stand in these things. And normally I eventually come to a point, and hopefully that happens. Hopefully that happens in this episode. That's not going to be not the goal in the episode, but I tend to have a feeling that I'm gonna have less conclusions in this episode than I regularly have. And we'll get into why that is in a second. But more importantly, welcome to the Donkey's Best Friend podcast. I am your host, Bobito, aka Bobito Mosquito, aka The Funk Soul Brother, aka Master B, aka Styles B, aka BMX. And you are listening to the 30th episode of this podcast. And to all of you who listen to this podcast, I just want to, as always, say thank you. To those who give me a little feedback here and there about the podcast, I really want to thank you. To those who are ghost listeners, just kicking, shout outs to you guys. You still listening, which is dope as fuck. So to all of you who listen to this podcast, it could not happen. It would happen without you, but it would mean less without you. So thank you for spending some time with me when you could be doing anything else. 30 episodes, man. 30 episodes. Oh, by the way, there's not going to be a guest this episode. Regular schmegular stuff. Or I don't know if it's considered regular schmegular anymore for me to be Ace Man. It's a good question. It's a good question in terms of the podcast that as a whole. I don't know. I'm enjoying having guests, but I also, today I'm really going to enjoy this episode. I feel. So I think we're still finding a balance there. And we'll see, man. We'll see, man. But the goal is to definitely have a co-host at some point. Let me break it down why. Just for maybe a starting point. I always feel like I would be a little bit more, I don't want to say fearless, but a little bit more unguarded with my words if I had somebody to police me in real time. What I mean by police is not somebody to tell me, yo, that's wrong or that's right, but somebody to give me a alternative perspective in real time. Because sometimes I have to be guarded on my words, or I feel like I have to be, and I'm going to try to be less guarded with my words and my opinions. But nonetheless, I feel like it's striking a balance, because I could be off the cuff, just yo, and this and this and this, and I could really say something that I never gave much thought, or that was not challenged. You get what I mean? And that's not a good thing. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But my goal is never to come out here and say really just blindly offensive shit. That's just not me. But in a real conversation, even if I do say something off the cuff blindly, I'll have somebody to give me the alternative perspective in real time, and I'll be able to show that that's not my intention. But here you guys listen to me, and then you get your opinion. And I guess I'm getting more comfortable with that aspect of podcasting. But anyway. Last week, me and my guest and honorary, it's not even honorary, me and my guest and producer, Christopher William Slack, were discussing Mr. Zuma. Oh, by the way, guys, if you have not listened to episode 29, go and check that thing out. I won't even lie to you. It is definitely my favorite episode that I've done. I think it's the funniest one we've done. Not just me and Slack, just the funniest episode that's happened on the podcast. yeah, I just had so much fun. And Slack started getting a bit drunk towards the end. Started caring less and less. Which was amazing. But yeah, me and Slack were talking about Zuma going to jail. And Slack wanted him and FW to Slack to fight. And whoever wins gets to stay out of prison. And the other one gets to go to prison. That was basically because of FW de Klerk's racist policies that he had in place. And Zuma, like, they were both pretty much products of their time and their environment. So that's going to be a running theme throughout this podcast, I think. Being a product of your environment and the times that you live in, or the times that you lived in. But anyway, that's not really the point at the moment. The point is, Jacob Zuma, we didn't believe, or we heard, we saw, Constitutional Court sentences this guy to a year and a half, something like that, in jail. He's got 5 days to report to prison, or he will be arrested. And we were like, nah. Like, it's not happening. Or not, it's not happening, but we'll believe it when we see it. We've been duped before. I can't even remember who it was who got out on medical leave. I gotta fucking figure that guy out. That went to jail and got out on medical leave. I'm gonna figure it out. But anyway, we thought that the appeal or something, just at the last second, they were gonna spring it out on us that he's not going to jail. And Carl Niehaus was gonna be like, I told you, and and that's how it was gonna happen. We thought that's how it was gonna happen. And that was not to be done. Last night, or I don't know if you wanna call it last night or early this morning, he actually went to jail. Or at least the police had arrested him and had him in custody. And sometime today he went to jail. And like, I was waiting for, like, the moment that would have made it for me was if Becky Keller himself arrested this nigga and took him to jail. That moment right there would have been worth it all. But alas, that wasn't it. There was Zuma supporters outside, wilding, going back, you know, them saying, you're not getting our nigga, or Ubaba. And like, I saw the nigga Carl Niehaus there. Niehaus, am I saying that right? I don't care, to be honest. Not because I don't respect the fight that he... That's the thing. So a friend of mine posted something on Facebook, and it was basically a question. He posed a question to his followers, and I eventually posted the same question to my followers. And the question was, or more so, he posted a statement and I posted a question, but it was a poll. And the question was, or his statement was, really, our justice system has failed us. Jailing a 79-year-old struggle fighter who has already served his time in his younger years fighting for this democracy. Sad, sad day. Now, that has been a sentiment that has been echoed throughout this country. And that's, I think, what you can summarize as the Zuma supporter stance. That this man gave up years of his life, not only when he was imprisoned, or when he was a prisoner of apartheid, or I think he was when he was in exile, but then he got caught, I think, and he was a prisoner of like war. I don't know, I'm not too familiar with the exact history, but he was imprisoned. I don't know if it was at Robben Island as well, I'm not sure, but I know that he was imprisoned. And let's not even take into account his imprisonment, and if he wasn't in prison, not no shit about shit. But let's take into account him going into Asia and leading Mkhonto with Sizwe. And that's actually where him and Carl Niehaus began their relationship. You can call it their brotherhood, if you can eat that, like those niggas. And I understand that level. I don't understand that level of loyalty to a human being, because I, and none of us, most of us, have not been in a situation that, or in the situation that those two brothers have been through, whether it be fighting against a country, a regime, for what you believe is right and to free your people. Like, you cannot negate what this man gave up and what he dedicated that portion of his life to as a young man. You get me? Like, it takes a special character to not only rise to the top of fighters, but to lead the arm of the resistance, of the rebellion, of the people, the people's army. Like, this is a very special man. And it's crazy how we've gotten here. But it cannot be negated that we've gotten here based off actions that Zuma took himself. And I guess that's what makes the whole situation, like, as much as it's kind of humorous seeing Carl Niehaus. I fucking died when I saw the video of him getting arrested mid-prat. Like, mid-prat, this guy. This guy got arrested. Cop was telling him, "You address no one, you." That was fucking hilarious, bro. That was fucking hilarious. But yeah, it's pretty funny. Or I wouldn't say, yeah. That was funny. And yeah, man, I guess to summarize my feelings on the whole situation, I do not negate what Zuma did for our country, for our people. Don't get that twisted. But I do not negate what he did to our country and to our people. He can be both. People can be both. People are not innately evil, or angelic. I don't know what you want to call it, or like innocent. People have both sides. People live in a space of duality, and you can be both liberator and oppressor. You can be both freedom fighter and thief, or corruptor, corruptioner. Whatever word you want to use there. You can be both is basically what I'm trying to say. So I do not negate what Zuma gave to us, but I do not negate what he took. And I think maybe it's that idea that you're always measured. Like, it's an idea that I think sportsmen understand very well. I think salesmen understand. I think most people in life understand the idea of you're judged on your last action, not on your actions previously, which is maybe unfair, but it's the way of the world. We do not weigh all the good that you've done against the bad. We weigh the good that you did, and hopefully you reap whatever reward is necessary for that good. But at the same time, the bad you do is normally outweighs the good. That's just the way of the world. Now, the idea that he already paid his time. Now, that's something I've always, it's something that I think anybody, like, who thinks about being wrongfully imprisoned might think about. Like, if I was wrongfully imprisoned for 10 years, surely I gotta get some money or some form of payment. And I'm not saying steal it, but in America they've got a system that if you're wrongly convicted, just like Bill Cosby's about to sue the motherfucking pants off the states, or I don't know who he sues, but best believe they fucked up sending him to jail. Let me break that down for anybody who doesn't understand why Bill Cosby's out, but I mean you'll understand as much as I'll understand because we're probably reading the same articles here. But basically the prosecutor who prosecuted Bill Cosby, the DA who prosecuted Bill Cosby, used evidence that Bill Cosby himself had provided in a testimony that was given to the prosecution or the DA's office in return for them agreeing or making a deal not to prosecute him on these charges. So what happened was there was a previous DA who made this deal. Like, okay, listen, we don't have enough evidence to really get this guy. Think about what's his name? Law Abiding Citizen, that movie. Think about the fact that, like, the what's his name's character, Jamie Foxx's character, was like, yo, listen, we don't have enough evidence to guarantee a conviction on this guy, but what we can do is this, this, and this. And that's basically what was happening with, or what happened with Bill Cosby. Listen, we don't have enough to get him on criminal charges, but if we can promise not to charge him on criminal charges, we can offer him that, what's it called, immunity for his testimony that you can use in your civil case, and therefore you can at least make a lot of money. So remember, there's criminal charges and there's civil charges. Criminal are for like jail or fines, like they're for jails or fines. Whereas civil charges are for more so money. Like, yo, you did this, it caused me this damage, you cannot give me back my, let's say you rape somebody, like his situation, you can't take away the action that you've done, you cannot rectify that, so give me money. And I'm not saying that that's like a fucked up way of looking at it, it's just an interesting way that I think it is damages, and it's just interesting, like money. But I guess, yeah, I'll think about that a bit and maybe come back to you guys on that. But yeah, so now after agreeing to this, that DA went out of office and a new DA came into office. And the new DA was like, nah, fuck that deal, I'm prosecuting this nigga. He literally has all the evidence that he needs now. But you can't just go back on a deal. A deal is a law-abiding agreement. Once you agree terms, you are at the state, which is what he represents as the DA, district attorney. He cannot go back on the word of the state. And because he did, and Bill Cosby lost something like 2 years of his life in jail, and is now being released because of an appeal that found the whole prosecution, or the basis of the prosecution, unlawful. He is gonna sue the living pants off these motherfuckers, and he'd be right to do so. Now, do I believe he's right in the sense that he shouldn't be in jail for his crimes, which he has admitted to? I'm not saying he did everything. And by the way, disclaimer, I don't know shit about shit. I read here, I read there, and I don't know shit about shit. So none of this is factual, from the Jacob Zuma conversations to anything that I speak about in the rest of this episode. None of this is factual. It's my opinion, and who knows if I'm right or wrong. But as I said, I'm coming here with more questions than answers. So yeah, I don't think, so he has admitted to some of these actions, because you had something like 50 something cases of rape, and based on this testimony that he was actually jailed for, clearly there's enough evidence that he has given himself even to admit that he committed some of these rapes, at least some, and therefore he should be in jail. But the way that they got him, it's right that he shouldn't be in jail. Does that make sense? Like, and that's the funny thing. It's interesting to see, and it's a bittersweet kind of thing, because you get like, you see the system work against the system, which, I don't know, it's oddly satisfying to see that they broke the rules to prosecute, for lack of a better word, a black man. And they fucked up. And because they fucked up by playing the system in the wrong way, a guilty man is walking free. And it plays a nice parallel, or let me not say nice, but it plays an interesting parallel with policemen in the States walking free after they killed black men. Not saying Bill Cosby is a poster child for black men, and yes, happy birthday, yeah, he's out. No. Just saying, I think the system has to ask itself a few questions because of this. And that would be a great silver lining in this whole situation. But how that's relevant to Jacob Zuma is, fuck, I can't remember. I can't remember how that's relevant to Jacob Zuma. I think I was saying something along the lines of Jacob Zuma. I can't remember, fuck all, bro. I fucked up. Jacob Zuma's going to jail. Jacob Zuma was the man back in the day, not the man now. That he can sue. Someone can sue. Ugh, I can't remember. But yeah, man, it's interesting. But another thing that I was thinking, bro, about the whole Bill Cosby thing, it's maybe permeated more and more. It goes for Bill Cosby. It goes for a lot of powerful men that have fallen ill of the Me Too movement. Let me pose a question to you guys. Let's look at Harvey Weinstein, for example. Let's move off Bill Cosby and move to Harvey Weinstein for a second. Now, Harvey Weinstein is one of the most repulsive, or committed some of the most repulsive acts, if all the testimonies and crimes are to be believed. Now, he's been convicted and jailed. So, yet again, I'm of the opinion that at least some are to be believed. However, if you are raised in a time where the system that's around you is poisoned, and you are poisoned in return, and go on to commit poisonous acts, when that system is going through its cleaning process and being cured, should all the bad apples be held accountable? Well, obviously, yes. As I said, I'm going through this in real time. I'm just thinking about this in real time. So yes, they should be. But as a human being, is there not a little bit of you, like personally, there's just a little bit of me that goes, man, he never had a chance. You get me? Like, I don't know. not a perfect human being by any stretch of the land, not a great person, not a good guy, and probably in any realm that he was placed in any system, in any position, he probably would have found a way for his poison or his evil to come out. But maybe not. You know? Maybe not. Maybe he is a victim of circumstance. And what I mean by that is, if you've ever seen a picture of Harvey Weinstein, that guy is like, he's as repulsive as his actions. And I don't know, that sounds a bit swag, but it is what it is. He looks, he sounds, he moves just as, and I think it's maybe the combination of not only the looks, but also the behavior and just the persona, and just everything just makes your fucking skin crawl. Like, ugh, this guy. And you come, like, you kind of think to yourself, this guy probably, as a younger dude, not getting much action with women, not really getting much attention from the opposite sex, growing up in a time where money and power was it. If you had money, if you had power, you were able to get women. Those were the rules of the game. Women knew the rules of the game, men knew the rules of the game, and everyone was willing, oh, let me not say everyone, but they were willing participants. And it was a fair trade. It reminds me of women who date extremely successful men who are not attractive at all to them. I mean, who's to say who's attracted to who? You know what I mean? I don't know. But is it not a fair trade that you're attracted to my extremely attractive, like, I'm talking in the perspective of the woman, you're attracted to my extremely drop dead gorgeous looks, and I'm attracted to your immense unfathomable wealth. Those are two things that are traits of ours that we're both attracted to, and from there maybe there's an attraction in terms of meeting of the minds or something like that, who knows. But it kind of reminds me of that. It's like they can't find Harvey attractive in his personality or his looks, but they find his money and power attractive, or at the very least they find it a stepping stone. I don't know if I'm making sense. I guess what I'm trying to say is that holding people accountable for their actions, when those actions were looked upon differently in the time that they were done. Like, does it make sense? Like, in those times, especially Bill Cosby. Like, Bill Cosby also has this, and I hope I don't, like, I'm just asking questions here, guys. I hope nobody takes me, like, well, that's the thing. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is kind of what I wanted to do with the podcast, bro. I wanted to ask questions and have conversations about shit that, like, people don't want to think about, or even if they do or have thought about it, can we have a civil conversation about these things? And maybe it would have been great to have somebody, but I wanted to do this myself. But anyway, Bill Cosby, he was accused of drugging women and raping them, when obviously if you've been drugged without your knowledge and somebody has sex with you while you're feeling the effects of those drugs, then that's rape. No two ways about it. However, if, and especially in these times, remember, I'm not talking about nowadays when we are fully informed, or at least you should be fully informed of exactly what consent means, exactly what consent, what consent means, what, like, consent that has no weight. Like, if somebody is intoxicated and they give you consent, that does not justify, or that does not satisfy the definition of consent, because they were inebriated. They do not have the wherewithal to provide that consent. So we are very much informed, and I think it's, we have the internet to thank for it. We have women to thank for it. We have the brave women that have come forward and given all their different kinds of experiences, women and men, who have given all their different kinds of experiences in the dating world, in their sexual encounters, both consensual and those without consent. And we've come to an understanding of what is acceptable behavior. But in a time where the internet wasn't as prevalent, people were a lot less vocal about their disagreements with the status quo, you would be, I think it would be understandable, let me not say, understandable, or at least I could see a situation where Bill Cosby, being him, who, let us not forget, this man was on top of the world, all the money in the world, producer of one of the biggest shows in the US, just a worldwide star. You can't imagine that he was not, like, some way, shape, or form charismatic, and that people and women did not find him attractive and, what's the word? Attractive, and would not want to have sexual relations with this man. So, let me paint one scenario. Now, we know that there are scenarios where he gave women drugs without their knowledge, and he had sex with them. Rape. Gives women drugs, or they take drugs together in a time where everyone is taking drugs, everyone's party. That's how you party. And you end up having sex with them. Now, in today's terms, that would be a very dangerous situation to put yourself in. Because if the next morning this woman does say, woman or man, by the way, but anyway, this woman does say that she was not in a state to give you consent, and what you perceived, because remember, you're also on drugs, so what you may perceive as consent may not be consent. So it's a very dangerous thing to be having sex with people who are on drugs when you're on drugs, or under the influence when you're under the influence. It's very dangerous to yourself, let alone to that person. Like, to that person, obviously, but, like, we know, at least now, as men and as women, at least we know today where you stand in those kinds of situations, where you possibly could stand. What could possibly be the outcome? And is this night worth that? And that's a question that every man, woman, and I was about to say child. But everybody has to answer for themselves. But in those times, there was no real conversations like that. I'd like to think, but I doubt. Maybe they were being had, but not at the level and the scale that they're being had now. So it's just like, wow, man. And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, or, and maybe this is a false parallel, but think about the apartheid regime, right? People are not allowed. The restaurants are legally allowed to, what's the word? Restaurants are legally allowed to, what's the word, man? Legally allowed to discriminate against people. And in this discrimination, there's white restaurant owners who tell black patrons that they are not allowed to come into their stores. And in fact, they maybe call the police, or maybe in defense of their rights at the time, they commit violence towards offenders of these laws, of these apartheid laws. Now, we in South Africa had what's called the Truth and Reconciliation Council. And in that council, people who committed acts of inhumane acts of discrimination and violence towards the opposite, or not opposite sex, towards the majority black and people of color races. If you came forward, basically said that you were sorry and that you didn't understand, or that you were as well a victim of a system that had you destined to fail, or you know what I mean, had you, like, you were a victim of a system that caused you to behave in a way that was inhumane, and those people were pardoned. It feels to me similarly to going and like knocking on these people's doors. And some of these people were parents and grandparents of you, of some of you listeners. I'm not saying that it would be right if they were knocked, like if someone knocked on their door, came in and said, "Yo, you owned this and this restaurant in 19th Sec. Yeah, I did. All right, cool. You're under arrest and you should be ashamed of yourself." And they walk down the street and they are now shamed and like, I don't know, prosecuted for actions that at that time were the norm. Now, yet again, I'm not really even talking about Bill Cosby at this point, like, anymore. Just talking about in general. Like, it feels like, it doesn't feel right. But I could be missing a lot of factors. And one of the big ones, I believe, is morality. Morality is something that people seem to think, some people are of the opinion that you innately have morality and you innately don't. There's no middle ground. You cannot be taught morality. Now, that's an interesting concept to me, because I definitely believe, because that in that sense, you would be of the mind that people who have committed heinous crimes, and maybe not even heinous crimes, just crimes, are irredeemable. They cannot show remorse and cannot be rehabilitated because they are innately immoral people and they cannot change. That's how you would see it. Which I don't believe to be the truth. I believe that people can change. I'm not saying everybody, and I'm not saying it doesn't take work and it doesn't take, I don't know, it doesn't take work, it doesn't take an environment change, there's a lot that goes into somebody changing their, or a leopard changing their stripes, or whatever that saying says, a tiger changing its spots, or cheetah, whatever. But I truly believe that maybe people are a product of their environment, and that perhaps knowing better, they would do better. So when the environment changes, is it still fair to hold people to their actions of the past? Is it fair to hold up people's actions of the past to today's morality? Doesn't seem right to me. But I guess there's a lot of nuance in this conversation and nuance in these chats that I'm missing, because I don't have all the answers. But yeah, man, moving on to just more craziness, bro. Like, I don't even know if it's craziness or it's just interesting shit to me, dude. But transgender woman in a bathroom in the States. Now, this is something that's been going on for the longest time. Like, the transgender men and women, the transgender community, and the LGBTQIA+ community has been, advocating for trans rights, as they should. But it's always interesting when a situation pops up that doesn't have a cut and dried answer. Or perhaps it does, and maybe I'm just missing it. But the situation that popped up was a transgender woman went to a spa. And not like a spa, like, like a spa. No, a spa. Sidebar, I didn't know Spa was not a South African brand. Or a South African chain. It blew my mind completely. I was watching fucking Ragnarok, which, if you have not watched Ragnarok, do not watch it. Trash show. Completely. Okay, not completely trash, but if anybody's watched it, let me say this. If you have not watched it, and nobody hypes it, it might be okay. But because it was hyped to me, like, yo, this is the most incredible show, and oh, you gotta watch this show, watch it now, by multiple people. And when I did watch it, I was like, trash. And I feel like that was an unfair assessment, because the show is probably not trash, just I expected way too much from it. Anyway, Spa was in this Norwegian show, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, blew my mind. It felt like, what was the other thing that I saw that I was like, god damn, are you fucking kidding me? I can't remember what the other one was, but I was like, nah, you gotta be shitting me. When it comes to mine, I'll let you know. But yeah, transgender woman goes to a spa, hits the bathroom. Now, she was pre-op. And for those of you who don't know what pre-op means, she still had her male genitalia. And as you do... Well, actually, I've never been to a spa. And maybe that should go on the bucket list. Or not bucket list, but like... I should go to a spa and like I should treat myself. Like, it's been on the back of my mind for a second. Anyway. Goes to a spa. Gets changed for her massage or whatever she's going to do. Whips out of her male genitalia. Black woman goes fucking crazy. Mad. Like, proper mad. And records her interaction with the front desk of the spa and, like, a few other people. And basically, her grievance, her initial grievance was, the fuck are you letting men in this bathroom for? Now, I am paraphrasing her grievance. I'm not calling this transgender woman a man. She repeatedly called this transgender woman a man. Repeatedly, and this is in the video, repeatedly references her penis and why her penis and balls, she later says, like, she's like, this man has a penis. Like, when, like, because just to give you a little bit more background, California, where this happened, has laws that protect transgender rights in terms of these situations. Transgender women are allowed to use female bathrooms in California. So, this spa is actually abiding by the law and not being discriminatory. They are not displaying discriminatory action by not disallowing. Jeez, there's a bunch of double negatives here. They're not being discriminative by allowing this woman to be in this bathroom. There we go. But this black woman has had a major issue with this. And she was joined by other women. You don't hear them, or you hear them, but they're not on camera. But they seem to be of the Caucasian variety. Maybe Latina. I'm not sure. But I saw one of the... So these women are now saying... that they have an issue with this transgender woman exposing herself in front of their children. And their explicit point was that their children had not yet seen male genitalia. And for them to be exposed to them in these circumstances was quite traumatic. Now, up until this point, I was probably like, nah, you gotta be moving with the times, lady. Like, and especially the aggression that was shown. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I'm very much a person who I think tends to give people the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, like, I don't expect everybody to have my views. I don't expect everyone to share my views. In fact, I expect that they don't. And therefore, when people behave in a certain manner, it doesn't really shock me. I just choose, maybe, but for myself, just to I'd prefer it if these grievances were voiced in a way that is conducive to a constructive conversation. That's one of the things. The other one was, there was a lot of name calling and just, like, you don't get anywhere with that kind of shit. But I get people are heated, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? So anyway, so this woman's going crazy, saying all kinds of men's and all kinds of penises and all kinds of dick and balls and just going buck wild. And the other woman also like, yo, like, nah, my children can't be here. And then, and I know what you guys are thinking. I know what you guys are thinking. You know what we needed? You know what we needed to break down this transgender experience and this misunderstanding between cisgender woman and a transgender woman and a establishment of business? You know who we needed to break this down? Pupito. So I'm here for you guys, because I know you guys are waiting for me to break this down. Like, I there could be no one else. So this transgender woman, what does she do? She says, no, it's not the transgender woman, it's a cisgender man. And he comes from the male bathroom, and he's like, yo, like, you guys, like, they following the law as they should. She's a transgender woman, she should be in the woman's bathroom. This woman's having none of this. No, that person, I think she calls it an it. She's like, it has a penis, and, or it has a dick. And this guy's like, you're being a dick. And then they get in a bit of a back and forth, name calling and that kind of shit. And then she's like, well, how would you feel if I went into the male bathroom? And he's like, by all means. And then there's some more name calling. She calls him not being a man, and he probably doesn't like women and that kind of shit. And more, as I'm watching this, I'm not liking this woman. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not liking her. But I understand her. But I'm not liking how she deals with all of this. From the recording of it to just the, like, I don't know, the way she carried herself throughout the video. And yeah, I just didn't like any of that, just personally. But it did not mean that the point about the children did not still hit me in a way that I think it was more so because I could not relate. I don't have children, and I can't remember the first time I saw a male or female genitalia. I mean, male. I think other than myself, it was either my brother or my dad. And female, my mom. Or my sister. One of the two. Probably my mom, though. So, yeah, it's like I can't remember seeing female or male genitalia other than that for the first time. And I don't think it would have scarred me. But I do think that if I was in a bathroom and I was a female, and remember, female, that's what I'm saying, I can't relate. Because I think females in this world have a completely, I don't even think, they do have a completely different experience than we do as males. In the sense that, as males, we take for granted rooms like bathrooms being for men. Because, as that man said, if a woman walks into a male bathroom, fuck it, I could be butt naked. I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be like, yo, what the fuck? I wouldn't feel unsafe. Does that make sense? But as a woman, I can understand that being a different feeling. And I can understand also now being forced into a conversation with your daughter that you didn't plan to have. But I guess that's parenting. But again, I'm not a parent, so I can't relate. But yeah, I just find it an interesting parallel. I think if I'm sitting here with you now, the simplest solution, which doesn't seem too simple in practicality, but for the long term is probably the best solution, is that transgender women and transgender men have their own bathroom. I think it's the only way that makes sense. Because if we're talking about that, or it's either that or the education of transgender women and men. And I think the other thing was that there was no real proof, which is an interesting concept, that this woman was a transgender woman. And I mean, that's very interesting, because if you think about it, a pre-surgery or pre-op transgender woman is, for all intents and purposes, biologically a man who identifies as a woman. So all that's really the difference between a man like me and a transgender woman is the assertion of what they identify as. But that's it. Now, is that assertion, and I don't know the California law, and I don't know laws in countries where this is more accepted, which, don't get me wrong, it should be, because these are people, they're part of our society, and they should have clear and defined rights that are humane. And the world needs to come to a stance, and come to an idea, and come to an understanding, so that they do not live in persecution. We just need to figure out what that is. And situations like this have to happen so that the laws can be informed. So, you get me? Like, one of the big things for me is just that, the assertion part. Like, you just assert that. I think it's a huge problem, personally. I think it leaves so much room for abuse. And both abuse of the laws to protect transgender women and men, but also potential abuse to men and women, majorly or majorly women, who may be found in a situation where they are attacked by a trans or a pseudo transgender woman who is actually a cisgender man who has mental issues. And I'm not saying mental issues will cause you to rape somebody, but somebody who is out to harm women and is using this as a Trojan horse kind of way. Now, I'm sorry, but that has to exist. I'm not naive enough to think that the world has, like, you cannot be naive enough to think that every transgender woman and every transgender man's intentions are pure. Just like every cisgender man and every cisgender woman's intentions aren't pure. There are people who are out to cause harm, and you are giving them ammunition to do so. We have to figure out a way to remove that ammunition. Whether that be identity cards, like on your ID, it's like you have to certify yourself as a transgender woman. Just as a man, you have on your ID, M. As a woman, you have on your ID, F. And there was actually a woman in South Africa I saw on my Instagram timeline who... a person who was born a man who is now a transgender woman whose CV or ID says F now. It says female. And I think that's probably a safe way of knowing, at least a safer way of knowing that these people are transgender women or men are who they say they are. You get me? Because I don't want it to be something where a transgender woman has to dress like a woman. What if she doesn't want to? What if a transgender woman would like to dress like a man, but she does identify as a woman? Legitly though. And she walks into a bathroom, dressed like a man, and starts unrobing. And people are like, yo, what the fuck? What the f-? There should be something to protect them from prosecution, as well as to protect those in the bathroom from Trojan horses. You get me? So I guess, yeah. But yeah, that this whole situation blew out of proportion. There were like protests and like, that's not really what I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to talk about the idea of like, it's just interesting how the world, and we have to adapt to the world. Like, these are children who need to be informed about this. The sooner the better, because it's not going away. These people have existed long before it became a movement, a larger mainstream movement. They've existed for, I can maybe say centuries, decades, I don't know how long, but they are now just getting the spotlight and getting the respect that they deserve. And therefore, do not think that this is not going to be something that your children have to be accustomed to and know how to behave, just like we do. Because if you fail to inform your children, they're going to go out into the world and they're going to become lepers because they have not adapted to the world, because you refuse to adapt to the world. You get me? But anyway, it's very interesting, very interesting point. Anyway, I had to edit out a large part of this podcast, or the back end of the podcast, because I didn't want to shoehorn a very interesting topic into the back end of the podcast where I barely, like, I'm already quite, I wouldn't say worn down by the conversations we've already had, but I wasn't giving it the oomph that I really wanted to. So it'll definitely come up in another podcast. And it's going to be mad interesting. It's going to be mad interesting. Tune into episode 31. But we are at my favorite part of the podcast, which is, if you don't know, well, now you know, the musical project of the week. And this week's musical project of the week is something that's really, like, sometimes the musical project of the week is something that maybe I just really fuck with the project and I just felt like shedding some light on it that week. Just like, I'm not, you know what I mean, just for the fuck of it. Like, anybody who knows me knows I love music and I love sharing music and I love like engaging with people about their favorite artists and stuff like that. So this isn't one of those situations. It is, but it isn't, because this project I actually have been listening to on repeat over the past week. It has been like the artist, I feel like I didn't really have a respect for the artist like I should have before this project, but I'm glad I do, because, or I'm glad this project came to light, or that like I just started listening to it. But The artist is Eliza, formerly known as Eliza Doolittle. And the project, so she's like a UK like soul R&B singer, more soul though. And the project's name is A Real Romantic. And I gotta be honest with you, bruh, like, it's a short project. It's nice, short and sweet, like, compared to some of the longer projects that I listen to on a regular. It's like 35 minutes long, released in 2018, and it's just soulful, dog. It's just really, I really like, it's one of those projects that you listen to, or I listen to, and I was like, I enjoy this, I like this. And the more I listen to it, the more it just took over my fucking, like, oh my god, bro. I actually I ran at like, I think it was a 5.76k run. What am I saying? I think it was. And it was the quickest time I ran this year on that distance, which is normally weird to me. Or I don't think it's weird. When I find an album that I'm really enjoying, I get like adrenaline, and it's just like an adrenaline rush. It's almost as good as sex. But I wouldn't know. Inside joke for anyone. We'll discuss that in a second, in another episode. But yeah, A Real Romantic. Standout songs were Wasn't Looking, Livid, and what's another one? Fuck, what's another song? Oh, Alone and Afraid. Oh my god. Even All Night. Oh my god. The whole album. Like, I don't skip songs when I listen to this album. I haven't skipped songs, I'd rather say, when listening to this album. Quite an amazing album. And that brings us to the air. Oh, I was saying she's like a UK. Oh yeah, I think I came across that. I think she's also like she's been in the game for a second. And I'm living with this project at the moment, but I am interested to hear what she's been doing, what other music, like what other projects she's released, and see if they hold up, or if this is one of those unicorn projects. I hope it's not, because I'm really enamored with her music. And I hope that there's more of it. But even if this is the only one that I fuck with, I'll be happy with. I'll be happy with that. I'll be happy with that. But yeah, man, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Yeah, man, if you're still listening up until this point, I really fuck with you. Until the next time, I bid you adieu, and I will see you soon.